Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
You can't, in your adulthood, all of a sudden start rooting for Duke. That is like a sign that you're a psychopath. Hello, you know who it is. That's Jason Concepcion. We've got a great show for you today on the Take Line program. Joining me today is one of my favorite people, truly one of my favorite people in the world. I think one of the funniest human beings on the planet, Jermell Johnson, one of the biggest sports fans I know. Also, Jermell Johnson, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Also joining us will be a University of Illinois Russian law expert and law professor, Peter Maggs, who's going to walk us through the continued imprisonment of WNBA star Brittney Griner in Russia. Josh Robinson of The Wall Street Journal will join us to talk about the UEFA Champions League ahead of the competition's quarterfinal this coming weekend. And finally, we've got a great, great, great version of Take Survivor for you at the end of the program, the triumphant return of Take Survivor. Let's get into the program. First, it is Sunday, and as we are taping this, like a half hour ago, the UNC Tar Heels throttled St. Peter's Peacocks, the 15th seed, the hard-charging 15th seed that had everybody talking, has throttled them out of March Madness, out of the tournament, setting up an iconic matchup in the Final Four, UNC versus Duke in Mike Krzyzewski's final year. Jermell, are you watching March Madness, and do you have any thoughts about any of these teams?
Yes, I am watching March Madness. You knew Duke was going to make a run just based off the way their regular season ended. Come on. Oh, Coach K lost at home. Oh, no. Oh, no, it can't end like this.
You know we're going to see the I expect it anytime soon. We're going to see the take. Oh, that was the wake-up call that Duke needed. The loss, you know, that loss against UNC at home. That was exactly what was necessary for Duke to kind of get their act together and do this. I'm glad, and I'm glad. Listen, St. Peter's is a great story. I've enjoyed it.
You believe that?
It was fun. It's what March Madness is. It's what people turn into March Madness to see. They tune in to see, like, Matt Stainbrook, who was driving an Uber while playing center for Xavier, like, put up 15-6 in an Elite Eight game. That's what they tune in. They tune in to see, dudes who look like they should be the bully in an 80s action comedy spearheading a 15 seed to the Elite Eight. That's
come on,
what
little Sam Rockwell. Little Sam Rockwell was the heart of the nation.
They tune in to see that. And now that it's over, now that it's done, I'm glad it's over because I really feel like the way the world is, we need UNC Duke. Like, I need that. I need it. I think the networks need it. CBS needs it. Hubert Davis needs it. Hubert Davis, very emotional after the game. Mike Krzyzewski, like, let's send him out with one of the iconic matchups in sports for the final time under his tenure. I mean, it really is, like, one of the great rivalries in sports writ large anywhere in the world. So I just, glad that we have it.
I am a University of Maryland Terrapin fan, so that's both right. Of these ball clubs can eat my shorts.
I hope it
ends in a tie.
Come on. Who would you be pulling for if you would? So are you going to watch it? You're going to watch
it. Of course
it. Come on, Jermell.
What do you mean?
Who would you vote? So you're just like hoping that both teams like die of dysentery.
Well, tie. The game ends a tie because of dysentery, but no deaths.
I gotta go for UNC.
I guess I'm rocking with UNC.
I'm gonna rock. Hubert Davis is a Knicks legend. Hubert Davis. I got to go for my guy, Hubert Davis. Yeah. I've never pulled for Duke ever in my life.
Rolling with Duke is out.
I can't start now. You can't in your adulthood all of a sudden start rooting for Duke. That is like a sign that you're a psychopath.
And this is why St. Peter's is the story, and I wish they won the whole thing. Isn't it funny how the D1 athletes who didn't have to go to high school for real always find a way to get the perfect amount of motivation to win the tournament? It's like, shut up, man. You guys are all getting drafted. Even if y'all didn't make the tournament, you're all getting drafted. These kids, this is their last shot. They might get to assistant manager, used car lot, based off of their play in this tournament. They need this.
They do need it. It was like the classic scrappy underdog thing, too, of we're going to make a million mistakes, but like some live action recreation of Hoosiers, we are just going to be in your sneakers for the entire game. And it's just one of those things where, like, if you're a 15 seed, you have to win every effort category. You got to win rebounding. You got to win second chance points. You got to do all that stuff. And you can't ever let it get to double digits because who's going to score the ball like to get you there? And so, again, I enjoyed it, but I'm glad that they lost here because teams like that, the loss is always a double-digit blowout.
Yeah, it ends in a kick in the head. But at least we get a new low-budget black basketball film. Soon, in about 4 years, there's going to be a movie on Bounce TV about this team. Come on, a roster, a 94% black roster, black coach in Jersey. This movie, this story was made for Bounce TV. I can't wait to watch it. Can't wait to see what role Taraji P. Henson plays in the project. This shit is going to rock.
I'm waiting for Shaheen Holloway to all of a sudden start coaching a bigger program. It feels like, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope he stays there. And because that was just, it was really fun. What an incredible ride that was for like 6 days to just be like, I don't know. I'm like rooting for this kid with a mustache right now. That's all I know.
Yeah. I hope it lasts forever, man. I mean, you know, we've seen some smaller schools build. I mean, I don't know where Butler is currently, but there's a path. There is a path for St. Peter's to take and build on this, and I hope they do, man. Don't poach Oklahoma. Leave this man alone. You don't need him. You got football. It's fine.
Next up, Kyrie Irving. The Kyrie Irving saga, the saga that has focused the attentions of the entire NBA watching world, has finally been resolved. New York City has lifted the vaccine mandate for athletes and performers, live performers, which means starting this Sunday, today, against the Charlotte Hornets, Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie Irving is eligible to play home games for the first time this season. Now, the unions representing New York City employees who were dismissed for not taking the vaccine are already expressing their ire at this decision and what they feel is kind of like a special exemption made for, athletes and performers. But here we are. The Nets did one good thing, which was not let Kyrie Irving play. And now all of a sudden, Mayor Eric Adams, who made news this week for showing an interest in giving the New York Police Department drones, has reversed himself, but reversed this decision, and Kyrie Irving will play. Your thoughts, Jamel?
I know a lot of people are putting this on Kyrie solely, but there's a lot of different factors. The Legion of Skanks played a role in this. The Yankees played a role in this. The entire Bronx played a role in this.
Yes.
His biggest mistake was that Kyrie Irving doesn't play for the Knicks. If Kyrie Irving was playing for the Knicks, it would be Bing Bong Part 3. And nobody have nothing to say. They would be at the Knicks game like, ooh, finally my tickets are worth something.
I will say that it was humorous to me following the Brooklyn Nets fan discourse that was supporting the conspiracy theory that Eric Adams was not going to change the rule because he is a Knicks fan, which was honestly hilarious because Eric Adams is just a wild guy. You know, like You can go into it and check that out for yourself. But as I stated, like, one of the things he's talking about is perhaps getting the NYPD drones in the run-up during the election. When it wasn't clear where he lived, he then showed off an apartment that it's clear belongs to his son. The guy is a former NYPD captain. He is like one of these crazy fitness junkies that drinks like weird smoothies with three different blender stages in it. He is a crazy guy, but here he is. He's done this. I'm a little surprised that he didn't first. I think that there was a way to do this where you have two sets of rules, one for the Yankees and the Mets, and one for NBA teams, the Knicks and the Nets, by way of saying, you know, okay, baseball is played outdoors, simply. Simply put, it's outdoors. The dugout is open air. It's not like NBA basketball where you're inside sweating indoors with other people, directly sweating on like the person that is guarding you, you know, running into screens. Baseball doesn't have contact. So I'm a little surprised that they did this as quickly, but we'll see. The tempest regarding the New York City employees who have been dismissed is already starting up. Adam said, "We're doing it because the city has to function. We're leading the entire country for the most part in unemployment." And so here we are. The United Federation of Teachers has commented, "If the rules are going to be suspended, particularly for people with influence, then the UFT and other city unions are ready to discuss how exemptions could be applied to city workers." We'll see if that happens. Do you think this is unfair to the city workers who were dismissed for not getting vaccinated, Jamel?
For sure, man. And I think what they need to do is give them all free bacon, egg, and cheeses. Every city employee gets one free bacon, egg, and cheese.
Folks, just take this voucher down to your nearest bodega and get yourself a bacon, egg, and cheese on Mayor Adams, folks.
Yeah, and only on a roll. You're not getting a hero. Just a roll, but it will be free. Aside from tax, you do have to pay tax.
There's a story in the city website, thecity.nyc, that quotes a bunch of small business owners. One of them, Mary Josephine Generoso, who owns a pastry shop in Bay Ridge, said, "What the mayor did today, it's pretty sickening." Continuing that, people who were working through the pandemic gave up their livelihoods and all of a sudden they're sidestepped because the mayor wants to support basketball and baseball players. It's unfortunate that this has happened like this, but I'm sure Nets fans are going to be excited. And so with that part of the conversation over, let's take a look at the Nets. The remaining schedule all the way through the rest of the regular season this Sunday.
Brought to you by DraftKings. Let's go.
Baby. Detroit, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Houston, the New York Knicks, Cleveland, and finally Indiana. They are sitting in seventh place, two games in the win column behind they're in eighth place, two games in the win column behind seventh place Cleveland. I expect them to make some sort of a push in clear of the play-in zone. What do you think? What do you see for the New York Nets in the playoffs?
I do see them passing Cleveland at the very least. You know, Cleveland's kind of on a slide in. They got the head-to-head matchup in Brooklyn, Kyrie's favorite place to be. Man, it's the East playoffs is like, you know, it's a big log jam.
Detroit, that's a W. Milwaukee Bucks.
That's a, because the Bucks been playing good. I'm going to say that's a loss.
Okay. Atlanta Hawks.
That's a win.
Right. Houston, that's a win.
That's a win. We're just going to.
New York Knicks.
Oof. Where's the game?
At New York. So at MSG.
I'm at MSG, damn. Nets win
versus Cleveland. Now this is going to be that's a huge game. Pencil that in the coming days.
So I have
Cleveland at home.
I'm saying Nets win because KD.
KD is the best, and Kyrie
KD is
like
the best. There's nothing we can do about it.
Kyrie has been absolutely like fire breathingly dominant.
He played for his freedom.
Rested.
He played for his freedom. This is the standards that we set in this country. If you can do an in and out dribble and you can go reverse one hand, yeah, you don't need vaccine. What if the vaccine messed up his handles, Jason?
You're absolutely right.
We're not talking about that.
We don't know the effect of long COVID on a crossover.
Exactly. So, the reason I got vaccinated is because I don't have to go to the rack at my writing job.
So let's say first round, Nets Heat would be the first round matchup potentially.
Ideal. Ideal for the Nets.
If they go crazy, it's not. The Raptors are only two games ahead. So it's not crazy that it then becomes Nets Celtics, which is very interesting because the Celtics have basically been, I mean, if you look at the analytics, like
unstoppable.
Theoretically the best team in the East.
The team that nobody is. I mean, I'm sure everybody, I mean, you know, in our world, everybody's aware, but I don't think the general public understands how good Boston has been recently.
They've been dominant defensively post All-Star. And again, the advanced stats will tell you that they are the best team in the East since the All-Star break. So that either, whether it's Nets Heat or Nets Celtics, either matchup is intriguing. I mean, do the Nets run all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals? What do you think?
I mean, it's not out of question because the middle is like Cleveland, Chicago are dealing with injuries.
Yep.
Toronto's not real. I mean, I liked how Siakam looks right now, but his best thing is being a rap line with the Miles Bridges song. So, you know, that's not real. The real squads is Brooklyn, Boston, and Philly.
The Heat.
These four teams, depending on where they end up on the side of the brackets, determines everything.
I think the Bucks have a run in them. They've been a little flip the switch type, you know, a team this season. They've had that energy of like, yeah, we won it. We know we can do this again when we need to.
They just couldn't keep a backup guard. They don't, you know, their backup sergeant situation was messed up all year. And Brooke Lopez.
That's true. And Brooke is back now. So here's I have no evidence to back this up other than my feeling of destiny and fate and all those things. I feel like the basketball gods can't let this happen, right? They can't let the Nets thrive all the way to the chip. But I do see them getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm going to say, I'm going to say it's going to be like 76ers, Nets. And
I mean, the Heat are beefing. They got Eric Spoelstra raising his voice. You know that's bad for his blood pressure.
You can't do that. Eric Spoelstra, Heat legend. It was interesting to watch the Heat fans just kind of rally around their guy Spo. Like, listen, Jimmy Butler is here for a minute, but Eric Spoelstra like came up through like the video team at the Miami Heat. This is a guy whose entire adult life has been in the service of the Miami Heat. Yeah. This is a guy who, remember when LeBron bumped him? Like, this is one of those things that just happens with the Heat because they get their DNA from Pat Riley. True. They're just like they care a lot. They are
passionate players.
They're passionate. They want to win. They drive very hard from the coaching staff on down. And I just feel like this is Much Ado About Nothing that I actually enjoyed. Like, I'll never forget when LeBron bumped Eric Spoelstra, I thought he was done. I thought that was it. I think they were like 9-8 or 9-9 at that time. Like, this was the first year of Eric Spoelstra and the Heatles. And I really thought, oh man, they're going to fire this guy and Pat Riley is going to come down from the front office and he's going to coach this team because LeBron clearly wants this guy out, and they stood by him, and I think they'll stand by him again. And I think it's probably Much Ado About Nothing, but man, Nets are about to throw a huge wrench into the entire Eastern Conference. And
above everything, I am a Kevin Durant truther.
Yes. Talk to us. You have a special relationship as a person from that area of the country, from Washington, D.C.
Yes.
PG County.
Yes. Yeah. I've been to some of the same carryouts as Kevin Durant. Yes.
Tell us what Kevin Durant means to that area.
I mean, he's just the best. We have all decided. We've all seen it. He's the best. Nobody hoops better than him. He actually went to Berry Farms and hooped. He actually was at the Goodman League. He was actually in the hood. We actually, come on. He was on DC Assault. He, if subpoenaed about the head of DC Assault's drug trafficking charges, he would not have answered any questions. We know this. And we just love him no matter what. It's Durant no matter what. He can do no wrong. And it just so happens he's also the fucking best.
Adding some spice to the Kyrie Irving story is that he has a player option for next season at $36.5 million. I guess it's possible that he could decline and sign an extension, a five-year extension up to $240-plus million. That is on the table, but who knows what happens. I would imagine if you're Kyrie, you take the guaranteed money because, man, they are obviously a championship contender and a real threat to win the East and win it all. And Kyrie Irving is one of the most exciting players in basketball. But I think that there's a lot of stuff that comes with the Kyrie experience, and that'll be fascinating to see what happens there. Up next, Deshaun Watson had his introductory press conference. He answered a bunch of questions pertaining to the pending civil litigation that he is facing. His answers, I'll just say for myself, were not terribly convincing. Jamel, your thoughts on the Deshaun Watson situation with the Cleveland Browns?
Obviously, I don't think he should be in the league at this moment.
Oh.
my first thought, I knew Deshaun Watson was strange as soon as he did that AWS ad. He was the first person to do a Next Gen Stats ad. And the way he sounded and the words he said made me feel off. I was just like, there's something wrong with this dude. I don't know what it is. Horrified to find out what it actually was. Bigger than that, the Cleveland Browns need to let it go. I think it's time to get the Browns out of Cleveland. The city needs to win too bad. They have lost sight of all morals. The compass is broken.
Yeah.
It began when they signed Dante Stallworth, who did kill a man.
He did run a man down in the crosswalk in an apparent DUI accident. He did do that. That did result in the a man losing his life.
And I just don't understand why LeBron James isn't enough for these people. The Browns need to be disbanded. Defund the police and disband the Browns.
So one of the details that about the Watson cases and that bothers me, and I think bothers a lot of people, just is one of these details that I find, basically incriminating, I guess you'd say, is that he employed some 40 massage therapists in the years that he was with the Texans. He was asked about that. A reporter said 40, I just want to go back to the 40 massage therapists. That feels like a lot, for a professional athlete whose body
is
a temple.
There's an entire roster.
Yeah,
the entire NFL roster of massage therapists.
Most big time athletes, they'll have like a couple, like maybe like a couple chefs or a couple trainers and like a backup one if that one's not available. But 40 massage therapists is a lot. Watson said, quote, let me see. 40 is just over the time. It's not in one period of time. I have been in Houston 5 years, so you go to different people. Like I said before, I can't get too far into details, but as businesses work and you move and meet different people and people have different schedules and blocks, you kind of meet people over time. Okay, so let me just say that 40, I mean, if you divide it out, and we don't know like, what the pace was here, but if you say like, okay, you were in Houston for 5 years, so that's 8 a year or, that's 8 massage therapists, different ones per year.
Which is insane.
Which is insane. And then maybe if you is this just over the course of the season? I would imagine, over the season, it's much more rigorous. You're playing and you're training. And so you'd need maybe more massages. So that would be 5 or 6 or 7 massage therapists, over the course of several months of a year. Again, that's a lot. That feels like a lot to me.
It's crazy. You wouldn't go to 7 different people to get your hair cut.
No. I'd go to one and I'd have a backup.
And if you are a person working in massage therapy and you land Deshaun Watson as a client and you want to continue working for him, you're going to be available.
One of the details about these cases is that Deshaun was contacting so many massage therapists that he apparently got, you know, as you would imagine, because there's 40 of them in this suit, that he forgot that he had previously worked with a massage therapist. So he contacted one that he had previously worked with and been weird with. And that massage therapist was like, hey, I'll massage you again, but you have to stop doing the weird sexual stuff. And then he didn't contact her again. And he went elsewhere, but he contacted one twice. Yeah. That's how many there are. And here's another thing. So I saw some people were like, you know, like Twitter and social media is not the best place to litigate this case at all.
Yeah.
Okay. But still, keeping up with some of the comments about this and some of the people who are supporting Deshaun, like I've seen comments have been like, okay, but this was like, these are people that are like, that are promoting their businesses and their massage therapy business on Instagram. So what does that tell you about what they do? That's like shows you that they're not legitimate. They were out.
Yo, Instagram is the only place you can advertise.
Thank you. This is what I wanted to say. Instagram is a place where many, many people advertise. And the idea that somehow, because it is a visual, photographic-based medium, that it is somehow a place where people promoting untoward businesses or illicit services.
That's called TikTok. Hello.
I found all of my tattoo artists through Instagram. Every barber that I've ever gone to in the last several years, I've checked them out on Instagram first. Trainers, how many trainers offer their services through Instagram? And indeed, during the pandemic, offered classes through Instagram. It's that part of it is crazy. That is the most accessible form of marketing and promotion that people can use for their own small businesses. That is out there.
And Facebook is done. Nobody makes Facebook events anymore. I've used Facebook. I've used Instagram ads. In 2021, I bought about $800 worth of advertisements saying this for tax purposes. But it's absolutely true, Jason. I spent $800 and I do have receipts that I can't find right now, but I did do it. My one actual take on this was that I thought it was super funny that they didn't announce that he was going to be eligible to play until after Washington signed Carson Wentz. They waited 1 hour after this. And I was like, this is sick. This is sick and disgusting stuff.
WNBA superstar in Phoenix center Brittany Griner was detained at the Moscow airport in the weeks before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. She remains in custody, was recently visited by State Department officials who said that she is in good condition. But further details of her legal status of her detainment, and what it might take to get her out remain opaque. To help us kind of unpack all the details and concerns around Ms. Griner's detention is a expert in Russian law, professor of law at the University of Illinois, Professor Peter Maggs. Professor Maggs, thank you for joining TakeLine.
Thank you.
So you've written a number of books about Russian law, and you're an expert in Russian law. First of all, I guess the one thing I've been interested in is like, how does one become an expert in Russian law? My understanding of Russia is that the standards of rule of law are much different than we are used to here in the West.
Well, there are different ways to do it. The way I did it goes back to my freshman year in college. And I needed to choose a foreign language. And I decided Chinese was too hard and Spanish was too easy. So I sort of flipped the coin and picked Russian. And very few people studied Russian then, so the instruction was really good, like a native speaker with two students. It was almost like private tutoring, so I actually learned some. Then when I went to law school, there was on the law faculty one of the leading American experts on Russian law. So I studied with him, and he encouraged me to go on. And when I got out of law school, they were just starting up an exchange of graduate students between the United States and the Soviet Union. And I got selected as one of the American participants in this exchange. And instead of having to go to work, I got a full scholarship from the US and Russian governments. So I spent a year there and was lucky again to study with a top expert in Soviet law there. Then after that, I've been teaching it for many years, writing on it and keeping up with it, going to Russia regularly until COVID, when I sort of shut down on international travel. Mm-hmm. And more recently, as you know, the State Department has strongly recommended against Americans going to Russia and saying, you can get in, but we're not guaranteeing you can get out. So,
yeah. So what are some of the hurdles that Ms. Grinder is going to have to clear in order to get this resolved?
Well, everything involving Americans in Russia during the Ukraine war has a political aspect.
Right.
So this is not like a traffic ticket. I've gotten stopped a couple of times by traffic cops in Russia, talked about of a ticket by fast talking. And that was in times when things were good. But this is much more serious. I've also followed various criminal cases, and you can divide them into ordinary crimes and things where there's political influence. And anything involving an American these days involves political influence. Thus, you need to look at the whole political context. But even where there's political influence, they're going to go through the formal steps required by the criminal code and criminal procedure code, which is what they have been doing. Everything formally has been by the book, so to speak.
Do they have court? Like, in my mind, Russia is just run based on dashboard cam footage.
Yes, they have courts. And there are a lot of ordinary cases. Somebody bought something, he says it's no good, he wants his money back. There's a child custody fight when a couple gets divorced. And many of those ordinary cases are decided in a pretty ordinary way by ordinary judges. Probably not decided as well as in the United States or England, because in the United States and England, being a judge is a very high prestige job. And in Russia, it's a very low prestige job. So it does not, and low pay. So it doesn't attract such good people as you get in the United States. And the judge is sort of viewed as a bureaucrat in the overall bureaucratic system, in which if you don't hear from the people above you, you just do your job. If you do hear the people above you, when they say to jump, you jump.
What is your sense of, so Ms. Grinder has been detained because the charges relate to her possession of, you know, a controlled substance, essentially. Yeah. What is your sense? It has been suggested, I've not seen this reported as fact anywhere, but it has been suggested that these charges are, you know, trumped up to some degree, certainly politically motivated. What is your sense of why these charges happened in the time that they happened? And you mentioned the political angle. At the point that a trial becomes political in Russia, does that mean that basically there can be no resolution until the top political figures in the country decide that there should be a resolution?
I think that's true. But going back to what you said first, various things can happen, and you can take two different scenarios. One scenario is some drugs are planted, and a number of opponents of the government have claimed that when they were arrested for drug offenses, that they had no idea that somebody had planted the drugs there. The police would arrive, with a search warrant, they start searching, and then they pull out some drugs. And these are real drugs, because in their evidence room, they have locked up real drugs from real drug offenders. So it was the real stuff. and it really was there, but the question was who put it there?
Right.
That's one type of drug offense. The other type of drug offense is you're a drug user, a drug dealer, and somehow the authorities come across what you're doing and what you possess, and you're in trouble. And that may just be ordinary trouble, may not have political consequences, but a big-time drug dealer may get into quite serious trouble. And a small-time user may still get into trouble for what you could go down to your corner shop here and buy legally in many states in the United States. So it's very hard to know in general whether something is planted or something is real. If it's planted, it's obviously political from the point even before they find the drugs.
But you don't discount the possibility that something was potentially planted on Ms. Greiner. That is something that could have happened.
It could have happened, and I think it has happened. And just a few days ago, the most outspoken opponent of the regime, Navalny, was convicted on completely fake charges.
And given another 9 or 13 years or something. Yeah.
So we know a political conviction on fake charges can happen because it happened a couple of days ago. On the other hand, thousands of people are convicted every day in Russia on perfectly real charges, often with fairly severe penalties. And occasionally, but it's a small percent, if they have a great lawyer, good luck, they can get off if it turns out they're not charged. For instance, if you're charged under a controlled substance, there has to be a lab test to prove what it is. You can attack the accuracy of the lab test if you're a good lawyer. Another thing, the length of the minimum and maximum sentence depends on the quantity of the drugs and whether you are involved with a group of people doing bad drug stuff. And again, a good lawyer can try to get this pushed into a category such as a smaller quantity or possession and not dealing or possession and not smuggling. So typically, lawyers rarely get somebody acquitted, but they do often get it moved into a somewhat lesser category or have some argument as to why the minimum rather than maximum sentence should be imposed.
Does celebrity play a role in like Russian court decisions?
I think celebrity does play a role. In particular, if you're famous for being an opponent of the regime, it's going to play a real political role. On the other hand, if you're part of their scheme to dope their Olympic contestants, yeah. Your celebrity may protect you if you're following instructions to take some enhancing substance.
Yeah, because that's what I'm wondering. Because, I mean, she's like a Russian celebrity. She's been playing ball in Russia for a few years. I'm wondering if that'll get her some juice. Shout out to OJ. I'm not going to elaborate.
Well, I don't know which way that will go. On the one hand, she's not a sort of undesirable character. She's sort of a role model as somebody who's worked very hard and gotten where she has in sports. On the other hand, if you take a hostage, the more valuable the person, the more valuable the hostage you've got.
Yeah. The conditions that political prisoners in Russia through the Soviet years and into the Russian Federation years is, I think, varied. But do you have any kind of sense what a prisoner of the kind of, you know, visibility of Brittany Griner would be held in? What kind of state should be held in?
Well, there are two stages.
Okay.
One is the stage before you're tried, in which you're in some sort of pretrial detention holding facility. And then in the normal course of things, you're going to be convicted. And if it's a long term, you'll be sent to a labor camp. And there are different levels of labor camp, depending on how serious the crime, uncomfortable, more uncomfortable, and most uncomfortable. It appears from what the State Department said that she's been held in fairly comfortable conditions so far. And of course, she's probably in top physical shape, so she could hold up better than many people could under trying conditions. But I think at this point, there's someone deciding what to do. And so they're going to hold her for a while, at least in fairly nice conditions.
Do you think these conditions involve a basketball court? And I'm saying that completely seriously. Do you think they're making her play basketball right now?
I don't think so. But years ago, I was on the grand jury here in my hometown. Mm-hmm. And under the local law, the grand jury has to go and inspect the county jail. We inspected it and had a very nice basketball court. But usually you don't have luxuries like that, particularly in the holding jails. The holding jails are, for the average Russian, often worse than what you might get if you're sent to serve your sentence in a labor camp.
I think, you know, here in the West, we're brought up just surrounded and immersed in this, you know, the U.S. law system, which we are, details of which bombard us from TV shows, from movies. And through that, we get this understanding of this kind of tradition that stretches back to like English common law, et cetera. But what is the tradition of Russian law? Like what is the kind of, if you could just like sketch it out for us, from where does it come from, and what are the, if there are any kind of like core philosophies behind it? You know, obviously in the English common law tradition, property rights, etc., those things are all very important. What are the like the important things for the Russian system?
Okay, there is a much shorter tradition in Russia, and the present legal system was formed in the latter part of the 19th century and largely followed the German model of having very specific written codes, having courts with the German model of those days. It's, everything works much better in Germany now. They have really great courts and so forth, and totally fair. But the difference was in Russia, except for brief periods when things were quite fair in the legal system, there were long periods when things were very unfair and orders were taken from the top. There were some brief periods in the 19th century, then brief period after communism fell where things were run pretty fairly. And the much longer periods of the czars and Stalin and Putin have been ones where the courts have been quite subservient.
Okay, so Brittany Griner, I think we can all agree her detention is like politically motivated. They see her as possibly an asset.
Well, there are two possibilities here. Either the whole thing is made up and it's totally politically motivated, or they caught her with something and it inevitably became political given the current state of U.S.-Russian relations.
And I don't know a lot, but I did watch Madam Secretary 2 times through. What are the odds that they plan to use her as like a bargaining chip? Are they going to try to like trade her for like Russian operatives that we have? Is there discussions when the State Department came and checked on her?
They've certainly done that in the past. Many years ago, I was involved in a case where the U.S. got 2 Russian spies. Mm-hmm. And the Russians then arrested an American businessman in Moscow and, you know, were cooperating with the State Department. The guy's business, which made the spare parts for the natural gas lines that distribute gas throughout Russia, stopped fixing them when they broke.
Mm-hmm.
So there were all sorts of things. And the U.S. authorities said, this guy's just an ordinary businessman you made a case against. We're not going to give up 2 spies because you made up a fake case. They said, we want to get your top 2 or 3 dissidents in exchange for the 2 spies, which they did.
Mm.
So there was bargaining on both sides and some heavy pressure from the U.S.
How do you see this resolving itself?
I think it is tied to the whole resolution of the Ukraine situation. And nobody knows how that's going to get resolved.
Yeah.
If the U.S. said, okay, we'll stop sending arms to Ukraine, Putin, you can have it. But by the way, we'd like you to release a few Americans. He'd say, fine, they'll be flying out first class on the next plane. But that's not going to happen. On the other hand, as long as the situation is unresolved, you want to keep all your bargaining chips. As you know, Russians are great chess players.
Yes.
And one pawn will decide the game between grandmasters.
Well, he is Peter Maggs, professor of Russian law at the University of Illinois. Professor Maggs, thank you so much for sharing your unique insight on this very serious subject.
Thank you very much for having me.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
The quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League begin this weekend. First legs. We've got Chelsea versus Real Madrid, Man City versus Atletico Madrid, Villarreal versus Bayern, Benfica versus Liverpool. And to help us unpack all of that, Wall Street Journal's Joshua Robinson, our champion of the Champions League. And first question, Josh, it has been revealed in a recent Wall Street Journal report that current, but soon we imagine to be former Chelsea owner Roman Abramovich, who apparently has been taking a leading role in negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, has apparently been poisoned or has exhibited the symptoms of being poisoned. This is insane news that I never would have imagined reading or speaking or talking about even 3 weeks ago, but your reaction to that?
It's a pretty extraordinary turn of events in all seriousness, where, you know, there are so few details are known that it's really difficult to speculate about where or why this is happening. But it does show that Abramovich is, you know, we kind of are in a situation where you never thought a sports owner could be in this position.
Right.
And the fact that this is happening is really extraordinary and tells you a lot about the journey the Premier League's been on over the past 25 years, where you've got people who aren't just interested in sports and people who aren't just like investing in sports, but who are real movers and shakers in the world who happen to own soccer teams because they either like soccer or have other intentions. You know, I think about this a lot when you come around to Man City, too. You think about the money that they've spent. The chairman of Man City is also the chairman of Abu Dhabi's sovereign wealth fund. And if Man City spends $1 billion or $2 billion on talent over 10 years, that doesn't really matter when you consider that the Abu Dhabi sovereign wealth fund runs $100 billion. It just tells you like what that the profile of owner in the Premier League has changed so immensely that the people who owned clubs 30 years ago can't even imagine it.
It's truly insane. Another thing I wanted to add that this is new news. There is another proposal to alter the way teams qualify for the Champions League. This on the heels of the failed bid to create a European Super League. The so-called Swiss model, if enacted, would basically use maths to allow a team that has been historically good to get into the Champions League despite having a bad season. In other words, I would call it the PSG tweak, perhaps. Your thoughts on this?
I'd call it more of a Man United tweak.
Okay, I like it.
Yay.
Hey.
Hey now.
And if, you know, in case you finish fifth or sixth or seventh.
Just in case.
Yeah, you get them in again. You know, we knew that UEFA was always going to make major changes to protect the big clubs. The Super League, in that sense, and these changes were super unpopular when they first proposed them a couple of years ago. And then the Super League happened, and that gives UEFA cover to say, hey, in effect, we're the least bad option. And, you know, so they still protect the biggest clubs. It's not the Super League. They still have the redistributive finance model. And they can say, you know, everyone, they can argue, and I'm not sure I buy it, but that you do want the biggest clubs in the Champions League year after year. And, you know, if a Man United misses the Champions League, or, you know, in some other crazy situation, as was shaping up for half the season, like a Barcelona misses it, you know, they can say, well, we're still protecting this competition and making it the most prestigious thing we have.
I hope the rule is enacted, but then they have to bring back like Newcastle or something. Like, the I want the math to be fucked up the other way. Like, now we're all watching teams from the 80s.
Newcastle's working on it. Don't worry about Newcastle.
They've got a cache of money incoming.
Oh, you want previous European champions like Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest back in this?
Oh, I love the Nottingham Foresters.
See what I'm
talking
about? Let's get
that. Let's get the trees back in there.
Exactly.
Going to these first legs, any hope for Villarreal versus Bayern Munich? In your, you know, can you see any daylight there for them?
It's not the kind of game that Bayern tends to mess up. They tend to be just extremely reliable until the semifinals, and then all bets are off. But I just don't see Villarreal having like the kind of strength over two legs to trouble Bayern.
Is Bayern ever going to get too old?
I know, right? Why do they keep being good?
They are already. But, you know, Bayern, Germany is the kind of league, and Bayern has figured out what PSG has, which is how to manage like a kind of, I would say, tier 1.5 league, and like protect your best players, make sure that they're ready to perform in Europe. In a way that PSG has a bunch of guys who like don't care about the league most of the time in a very visible way, and then are not sharp when the time comes. Bayern is just like a machine that runs for this part of the season. They also have like a really, really long winter break that helps a lot. So, you know, while the Premier League teams come in and traditionally were cooked by this time of year, Bayern was rested and tanned and fit. And, you know, the Premier League is trying to fix that. And also the squads are much deeper now than they used to be. But yeah, I mean, that was the secret for the longest time. Like, the winter break changed everything.
And I would be super pissed if I was playing against a guy who just got off vacation.
I know, me too.
Like, I've been in the trenches for months and now I got to go to Germany. You're like, oh, I just got back from Monaco. What's popping?
Right. It's like, are you a Premier League guy who played, you know, 8 times in 7 days over Christmas? And then, you know, Bayern is like coming back from Doha. That makes a difference.
Speaking of countries, Ukraine. So they've always played kind of a big role in Champions League. You could always see Dynamo Kiev or Shakhtar Donetsk, and they would be, one of these squads would be in this round, and they're not around now, obviously. What's the future of Ukrainian football? Like, are they even going to have a league going forward?
I mean, as we know, Ukraine has much more pressing problems than the future of the league. I think that the football universe, at least, will be very charitable towards Ukraine, you know, going forward. They're not going to say like, sorry, you didn't play, so you're shut out of everything. You know, there's just a lot of unknowns there. And I think if, you know, a Dynamo Kiev or a Shakhtar has to be grandfathered into European competition like a couple of years from now, then UEFA is probably going to be inclined to do that.
Keeping in line with that line of discussion, Chelsea versus Real Madrid is a pretty fascinating matchup. Chelsea thus far, the defending champion, has seemed to kind of been really admirably weathering the intense interest and upheaval that is kind of swirling around the team. What do you see for that matchup? And, you know, thus far, we've seen that it appears that there's two American buyers that seem to be the front runners to purchase Chelsea. Is what can you tell us about those competing bids and what perhaps the EPL is looking for, the British government would be looking for in a buyer for that team?
I mean, look, if an American buyer is successful in the Premier League, we're going to end up in a situation where 9 of the 20 Premier League clubs have at least some American interest.
And it's so popular with the British audience. They love that. They really love the American art.
They can't get enough of
the Blazers. They can't get enough of the American.
You know, people who come in and try to run a money-making business, which means like not spending wildly and trying to balance the books. Fans love that. What we would get, I think, with an American buyer, but on the other hand, from the Premier League's perspective and the UK government's perspective, an American buyer, very easy to deal with. It's kind of the dream situation for them because, you know, the books are easy to check in on. The sources of money are easy to document. And it's not going to be, you know, they're pre-vetted by whatever business they were already in. So, you know, someone who's had a career on Wall Street already comes into the Premier League and the Premier League is like, you know what? Okay, this is fine. We know what they're about. We know how they do business, and it's going to be, you know, everything appears legitimate and non-problematic. So the Premier League is happy to wave those people in, and the UK government is as well. There's no concerns over human rights. There's no concerns over possible government interference. So, you know, in a case like Chelsea, I think whichever American bidder puts up the most money will get waved through. What it means for the club is interesting because obviously they've gotten used to a certain standard of living. Chelsea is, you know, has quietly spent hundreds of millions of dollars in recent summers, even after we thought the era of Chelsea's crazy spending from like 2000s was over. They even had a transfer ban, and then they came back around in the next window and blew more than $250 million on talent. So it's not going to be the same under American owners, just because they come in thinking they're going to recoup their investment in a way that Roman Abramovich never cared about, because it wasn't about that. It was about winning.
I wanted to ask you about this. You wrote a really fascinating feature on Marcus Rashford that I urge anybody who has a Wall Street Journal subscription to go out and check out. Very interesting guy. Anything surprise you about your time with Marcus?
I really enjoyed talking to him, and it's rare, I think, to get a footballer these days who is willing to listen to your question and like think it through first. And he's just such a considered every question and really thought about it and made an effort to say something meaningful to him, which I really appreciated. And he really is a fascinating guy, because the issues he's talking about, which for anyone who doesn't know, was mainly around getting kids and families who depended on free school lunches access to those when schools were shut down during the pandemic. And that expanded into a larger childhood hunger program. And he spoke from a place of real knowledge on this because he lived it. He was one of those kids who depended on the free school lunches while he was trying to become a professional athlete and living out his dream of playing for the team he supported as a kid, Man United. And he's done a lot of great work there and got himself to a position where, the British government had a lot of very unpopular policies around this. And he created such a popular movement and such a clearly like right issue, you know what I mean? Where it's there's not really two sides to this. It's you can't let kids go hungry. And Marcus Rashford was trying to fix this. And it got to the point where he provoked government U-turns. And he's just a really fascinating, soft-spoken, like speaking from the heart kind of guy.
Aww.
And yeah, this is a guy who's going to have a career far beyond football and make an impact far beyond football.
Italy, knocked out of another World Cup, lost to North Macedonia. The hood part of Macedonia defeated Italy in World Cup qualifiers. They're knocked out now. There's no Italian teams in the quarters in Champions League. I mean, is this good for football? Did Italy just need a break after just years of just solid defense and corruption? Did they just need a break?
Isn't it crazy that Italy, in a period where they won the European Championship,
right,
they're defending European champions, but you look back at the past 15 years of Italian football, and it still probably goes down as one of the darkest periods in their history. So they won it. They won the World Cup in 2006, 2010 out in the group stage, 2014 out in the group stage, 18 and 22 don't even qualify for the World Cup. You know, the quotes from the Italian players after the North Macedonia game were just like pure opera.
Yeah, suicidal, just dire, you know, stuff.
We are destroyed. And but the amazing thing is that it's Italian soccer players. So when they say we are destroyed, I believe them.
Yeah, they mean it. Yeah.
Yeah, they really mean it. It's a tough moment for them. And it's, you know, Italian football is in a difficult position where they, more than any other big league in Europe, depend so heavily on television money. The other parts of their income are just not there. It's a league that also hasn't had a major kind of across-the-board stadium facelift since Italia 90, World Cup, because that's the real driver of stadium investment. So, you know, you've got Juve, which built itself a new stadium 10 years ago, but no one else is really doing that. A lot of clubs are playing, big clubs are playing in these like hulking, crumbling buildings that don't make it appealing for fans to go. The TV money is still way behind the Premier League and even La Liga. And it's just a creaking ship kind of floating at sea that doesn't really have a direction. You know, even the biggest clubs that have had major investment in recent years, like Inter, have suddenly seen that investment dry up because that was a Chinese billionaire whose business heavily suffered during COVID. And the club could not pay its lavish salaries anymore. So it's just kind of spinning its wheels, to mix metaphors. And it means that like the money then doesn't trickle down into development and to turning over the players.
And then finally, let's get your thoughts on some predictions here. Now, with Arsenal threatening to finish top four, I think we all agree that it's Arsenal's era starting next season and every
it's
season after
upon
that,
us.
Right?
I would say it's upon us.
An era of pure dominance.
Once they hand us Vlahovic,
right,
and just get out of the way.
A hegemony by Arteta's men out there across Europe. But for now, give us your prediction for the quarterfinals, semis, and the finals. Who do you see playing for it all?
I think ultimately Real, for the magic they produced against PSG, like, will not go that much further. Sticking my neck out here against, like, you know, the greatest Champions League team in history. But they, like, fundamentally, they rely too much on just moments of magic from individuals named Karim Benzema. But it's, they're an old team. They're not that exciting in a lot of ways. And Chelsea is so solid back to front. I think over two legs, they should be able to get through, you know, and assuming none of the administrative chaos seeps through into the team, which it hasn't so far. Mm-hmm. You know, Chelsea have to be one of the favorites to defend it. Bayern, of course, you know, fresh and tan as they are, we'll see probably into the semis, possibly a final. And then, you know, really, honestly, it's just tough for me to look past the Premier League at the moment. Liverpool, City, Chelsea, I think any of those teams could win it.
He is the Wall Street Journal's Joshua Robinson. Joshua, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your crave.
Oh, yeah, you know what that sound is? It is time for the dramatic, triumphant return of Take Survivor. Joining us today, he is the producer of Take Line. He is Ryan Wallerson. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to play my first round of Take Survivor, man.
He is a stand-up comedian, a co-host of several podcasts, including Airbud, Sorry We Love NFL, NBA Storytime, and more. He is the great Jamel Johnson. Jamel, how are you?
I am exactly fantastic.
He is a writer on All Caps NBA and a stand-up comedian, a Phoenix Suns fan. He is Aaron Edwards. Aaron, how are you?
I'm doing good. Watching James Harden flop right in front of me. You know how things are.
He is the host of Stuck with Damon Young here at Crooked Media and also a 2020 recipient of the Thurber Prize. He is Damon Young. Damon, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just hanging like wet clothes. Now, I mean, I'm good right now.
Folks, welcome to Take Survivor, the game where only the strongest take wins. Here's how it goes. Three rounds. First two rounds, all of you will vote for the weakest, the worst take in the round, and that person will be eliminated from the island. In the final round, y'all will be voting for the strongest take, for the winner. Don't worry, these instructions will come back to you again before the final round. Are we ready to begin?
Yep, let's go.
Oh.
First prompt. Best underdog ever in any genre. I'm talking David and Goliath, the actual biblical David versus Goliath. I'm talking the Roadrunner. I'm talking any genre, not just sports. Best underdog of all time. Ryan, let's start with you. Who is the best underdog ever?
I'm going to go with Tom from Tom and Jerry.
Wow.
Because while he went down pretty much all the time to Jerry from numerous facets, right? He never gave up. And most of those episodes, he had us thinking as kids, damn, this really might be it for Tom. He might really get him here. And when he fucked up, when he finally like came down and he would fall, more times than not, it was by his own doing because Jerry like got into his heart. Like, but he was always down for the smoke because Jerry's formidable, man. Jerry is an absolute menace. Like, there are not a lot of cats out here, cats or non-cats, that can contend.
Human cats.
Like, yeah. Human cats, alien cats, inanimate cats, metal cats. Like,
okay.
I'm going to go with Tom, man. Respect to Tom.
So that is Ryan Wallerson with Tom. Jamel, who is the best underdog ever?
Quick honorable mention to the 2006 George Mason Patriots. Big up to my guy, the team that got Jim Larranaga his retirement money. Shouts out to Tony Skin, everybody in PG County. We love you. Thank you for coming across the bridge. My actual answer, Squints in the Sandlot.
Whoa! All right.
Squints, a child, a pervert. Both a child and a pervert.
The pause.
Defeats. He overcomes all of the odds. Devises a sinister plan to make out with
really
the
does.
Grown woman he's obsessed with.
It really does. It was troubling, that relationship.
Not only does it work, he marries the woman. He has several kids. They probably got a daycare now.
Well, an incredible answer from Jamel Johnson. Aaron, best underdog of all time.
Best underdog of all time. I'm going with the Little Saints from the motion picture You Got Served.
Ooh.
You heard of it?
Ooh.
You heard of it?
Wow.
They lost. They got washed by the dance crew that knew all of their dances. They rallied around the little homie, Lil Saint, getting blasted, and they ended up pulling it off at the end. I mean, what's better than that? Like, a whole team jacks your whole thing, and you come back and rally around your boy and win a whole dance competition? It don't get better than that. I'm sorry. That's it.
Aaron Edwards with the Little Saints from the film You Got Served. Damon, who is the best underdog of all time?
I feel like this answer should be obvious, man. It's humanity. We are the biggest underdog that has ever existed. Well, I mean, just think of all the shit that needs to happen for us to live. All right, for the first 12 years of our life, we're useless. We are defenseless. We could get eaten. We could get stabbed. We could get shot. I mean, there are viruses that are here just to kill us. I mean, there are fucking solar flares, aliens, diseases, water, white people, casserole, all this shit.
Takis.
On the planet Earth that exists here to kill us. You know what I mean? And just the fact of our own existence, us versus the universe, us being here is a fucking miracle. We are St. Peter's. Fuck St. Peter's. I went to Canisius College. We are Canisius. Canisius hasn't been in the tournament since 1995. We are Canisius College, right? Playing against motherfucking the three-peat, you know, Heat, or they didn't three-peat. But anyway, yeah,
humanity,
humankind. There's no bigger, no greater underdog than us living
on this. Those are our answers. Let's go to the voting. Reminder. Everyone here will be voting for the worst take, and the voting starts now. Please DM Zuri with your vote. Will it be? Who will be eliminated from the island first? Will it be Ryan, who says, yes, I know a cat is the natural predator of a mouse, but I'm picking Tom in Tom and Jerry as my greatest underdog of all time? Will it be Jamel, who shouted out the 2006 JMU Patriots, but then said Squints. Squints Palidorus. The perverted future offender, Squints Palidorus, is the greatest underdog of all time. Or will it be Aaron, who says, you remember how Elgin rolled and you got served and how he brought it back and was victorious against all odds with his newly named crew, the Little Saints? The Little Saints from You Got Served. Or will it be Damon, who says, yes, we are the most dominant creature on the planet with this big old brain, but it's actually humanity is the greatest underdog of all time. Yes, we have nuclear weapons and we cook our food and we wear clothes, but it's much more tenuous than you think. We're fighting uphill. Votes are coming in right now, and let's take a look. Okay, and here comes the voting, and we have one vote for Ryan. We have one vote for, adding them up. We have one vote for Jamel. We have another vote for Ryan. And our last vote, is this our last vote? Yes, this is our last vote and first elimination from the island. Ryan Wallerson has been eliminated from the island. Ryan, what do you have to say?
I went the way of Tom, man. I went with my heart and I lost. So this cat is out.
Okay. Prompt number two, round number two. What video game should be adapted into a film? We recently got the Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg vehicle Uncharted based on the long-running Sony video game Uncharted, the Uncharted series of video games. What video game should be adapted into a film? Let's start with you, Damon. Damon, what video game should be adapted?
I'm thinking that we should adapt NBA Live.
Wow.
And he said lie. He did not say 2K, people.
That's
he did
right.
Not say 2K.
My rationale for this is that basketball movies are typically terrible, right? Well, the movie itself isn't terrible, but the depiction of basketball in it is. And it's because there are no actors who can play basketball.
The crossover is, the Venn diagram is very small.
And it's not, and basketball is not a sport like baseball or football where if you're athletic, you can run and jump. You could realistically portray like a superstar athlete. With basketball, you need like the skill set. So we need to find not basketball players who can act, but the actors who can play basketball. Put them in this movie. You get like Rob Brown, who was Iron Man, found a Forrester.
You're the man now, Rob!
Dwayne Martin.
Yep.
And what's Mashar-Hala, Ali also played D1 college basketball. And again, the basketball scenes in movies are always terrible. So why not, you know, have a depiction of NBA Live and boom, and actually get the actors who...
So NBA Live famously has been defunct for a number of years because they just fumbled the bag in a absolutely tragic way in the face of competition from 2K. What is your... Give me your elevator pitch for NBA Live, the movie, starring Mahershala Ali. What is your elevator pitch?
You know, the reboot might make Kendrick up with Jack Harlow. We saw Jack Harlow play in the NBA, you know, celebrity game, and he's terrible, right? And so let's actually get a basketball movie with niggas who can actually... Okay.
I love
As long as they got the little icons underneath
them, that's
I'm
what
going.
We want to see in the that. Movie. Up next, Aaron, what video game should be adapted into a film?
I think that it should be Crash Bandicoot.
Ooh.
But you just kind of use it with a human though, because you can get any nigga in just Levi's and red chucks to just like run around the city. It's just like a
live
dude
action
in Levi's
Crash
and
Bandicoot.
Red chucks just running around the city, like trying to get treasure and dealing with Mr. Robotic or like all his villains. Like he got wild villains that could kind of get racial sometimes if you base it in Africa like it's supposed to. But if you just make it based in America, you can kind of like get around all of that stuff. You don't have to deal with the Abuda Bakas and like all that stuff. You can just get straight to it.
In the interest of fairness, give me your elevator pitch right now for Crash Bandicoot, the film.
Dude finds out at his, I don't know, like at his condo, but I want to say not condo, but you know, like the worst version of a condo. Like he's in a hood and he finds out that there's like a treasure and he has to go from different areas of the city to find certain treasures. And then at the end, he finds out that Mr. Robotic, probably a billionaire, is the one that's keeping his city.
I love it. Next up, Jamel. Jamel, what video game should be adapted into a film?
I literally wrote down Crash Bandicoot 2, so I have to do the I have to write down. But we can port that easily. Spyro the Dragon, the natural companion to Crash Bandicoot. Spyro the Dragon, starring Tom Hardy as a purple dragon who shoots flames. We get Christian Bale involved as well. Fun for the whole family.
In the interest of fairness, what is your elevator pitch for Spyro the Dragon, the movie?
Listen, the head of Miramax Films,
Harvey
Spyro
Weinstein,
the Dragon.
Currently locked up for a number of years. Harvey, are you listening?
Still?
We got a pitch for you, baby. This is a way back.
He's still... Well, I hope your cell reception is good, sir. Because I got a movie for you, and it is hot like fire.
All right, let's go to the voting. Who will be the second eliminatee from the island of Take Survivor? Will it be Damon, who says, in a world in which NBA Live no longer exists as a video game franchise, Mahershala Ali and Jack Harlow bring the famed video game series to the silver screen? Or will it be Aaron, who says Crash Bandicoot, the movie, and it is the story of a young man who discovers that there is a treasure somewhere in the hood, and he puts on his overalls, and he goes out, and he runs and finds it? Or will it be Jamel, who says Spyro the Dragon, starring Tom Hardy and Christian Bale? It is the touching story of Spyro the Dragon, a video game that I didn't play. And so I don't know what the story is. Who will it be? The votes are coming in now. And we have one vote for Damon to be eliminated from the island. We have one vote for Jamel to be eliminated from the island. We have one more vote for Jamel to leave the island.
Yeah, I voted for myself. It just felt like the right thing. It just felt like the right thing to do.
And his 3-1, including the vote for himself, Jamel Johnson is the second eliminatee from the Take Survivor Island. Jamel, what do you have to say?
I let the family down. go watch Spyro Dragon in theaters next summer. I don't know.
Well, listen, Harvey Weinstein is just absolutely salivating at the prospect of adapting Spyro the Dragon. And now we go to the finals. Folks, this is it. The finals. It is Aaron versus Damon in the finals of Take Survivor. And the question is, what is the greatest Oscar snub of all time? Now, I'm not talking about just who won an Oscar or who should have won an Oscar or who should have been nominated for an Oscar. It's anything. If you think John Borman's 1980 film Excalibur should have been Best Picture, that's the greatest snub, and that's the greatest snub of all time in your mind, then that's it. Greatest Oscar snub of all time. It can be nominations, it can be wins. Are we ready? Aaron, what is the greatest Oscar snub of all time?
Greatest Oscar snub of all time is from the movie Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, making so many bangers and not a single one of them being nominated in the Oscars for Best Musical Song or Soundtrack or anything. It didn't get nominated for anything at the Oscars. The movie is super underrated. They made bangers. They made Bin Laden. They made Mona Lisa. They made Gay. They made all these songs and not a single one of them got nominated. And it just seems egregious that they did all that work, put out an actually really good album. If you listen to it, the album is actually good. And not a single vote was put in for them.
Strong answer. You could argue that Popstar got fucked like they fucked Bin Laden in the category of not getting nominated for an Oscar. Damon, what is the biggest, the greatest, the most vile Oscar snub of all time?
Greatest snub, I think, of all time is probably Tyrese in the whole Fast Five.
Yes.
the TCU, Toretto Cinematic Universe. And okay, so and their little crew or whatever, crew of, you know, car thieves and hijackers and everything. He is probably like the 13th most important person. Like he's the definition of non-essential for what he does in the crew. But cinematically for us, for the audience, he's the third most important person. Like there's Vin Diesel, Dom Toretto, he's number one. And then the villain, whoever the villain is number two. But Tyrese is the audience avatar. He is the only one who expresses like, yo, this is some bullshit what we're about to do. Yo, we've been on like 15 missions and none of us have even broken a nail. What the fuck is up going on? So he's the only one who is centered in reality in any aspect. And also too, there's a recurring joke throughout this whole thing about how he is like, how he has a big forehead, how he's unattractive, big head. When Tyrese is one of the 6 or 7 most handsome niggas on the planet, right? Like he is one of the two people that my wife has like a hall pass for, and yet he has managed to portray, you know, someone who is convincingly ugly enough to be teased by the rest of these misfits. All right. So again, Tyrese, again, he is important to this multi-billion-dollar franchise. Gets no love. Gets shit on Twitter for good reason. But again. He is, you know, the greatest snub of all time. And they have like 16 of those movies. They can't nominate him for one of them.
Man, incredible answers. Let's go to the final. Reminder now for all our voters, this is the final. You're voting for the winner. Now, our two contestants do not vote in this case. The voting block is Jamel, Ryan, and Zuri. You will be voting for the winner of Take Survivor. And who will it be? Will it be Aaron? Who said, you know what? Mona Lisa, you're an underrated piece of shit. So will it be Popstar who says, why didn't Popstar win several Oscars for Best Original Soundtrack? Will it be Damon who says, where's my Lifetime Achievement Award / Best Supporting / Best Actor nomination for Tyrese in every single Fast and the Furious movie in which he provides the comic relief. He flies a small Japanese hatchback into space. He does all these things that are very important in terms of keeping the vibe right. Votes are coming in now. We have one vote for Aaron. We have one vote for Damon. And the deciding vote for our champion of the returned, the rejuvenated Take Survivor is for our champion, Damon. Damon, congratulations.
Welcome to NBA Jam. Nick.
What do you have to say upon winning the rejuvenated Take Survivor today?
I did not anticipate this. I had 1.5 takes prepared. I thought I would get eliminated early. Thank you for all three of the voters. I really appreciate you. I could send you all an edible arrangement if you send me your addresses in the Zoom. It was a great competition with Aaron. You know, he was a great competitor.
He brought it.
You brought it.
He brought it too. So again, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'm going to go celebrate.
I love it. And that has been it for Take Survivor. Join us next time, folks. Goodbye. That's it for us. Follow and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to Take Line Show on YouTube for exclusive video clips from this episode, plus my digital series, All Caps NBA, which airs every Friday. Check it out. Bye. Take Line is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Ryan Wallerson and Zuri Irvin. Our executive producers are myself and Sandy Gerard. Engineering, editing, and sound design by the great Sarah DeWalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. And our theme music is produced by Brian Vasquez. Mia Kelman is on the Zoom for vibes, and the vibes are fantastic all the time.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.